really the best way to play unforeseen risk is just to see out the risk, because after contraction comes expansion. And of course, after expansion comes contraction. It's always been like that. Welcome to the Urban Property Investor. I'm your host, Sam Saggers, here to help you crack the code of real estate wealth. Today's show, another code cracker. Yes, indeed. We're going to dig into the concept of risk. Yes, people's relationship with risk. I want to have the risk conversation because I think too many people cheat themselves out of, big opportunities because they fear the unknown, and of course, they fear the concept of investment. And of course, one of the biggest problems for property investors is not real estate, it's actually themselves. So let's tackle that conversation. It's a good conversation to have. And of course, I think there's some critical questions people need to ask around their financial future. And one of them is, are you too risk averse? And is that holding you back? So let's dig into it. Welcome back, regulars. You know the drill. Play the program in double speed. Get your life back. And of course, if it's your first time tuning into the show, wow, you've come to the right place, haven't you? Thank you for bringing your earballs over to the Urban Property Investor. Yes, you can go back in time too as a new listener. You can go and listen to all the shows I've done. They're all lessons on property investment. So feel free to dance about. I know one chap is going through the whole 190 plus episodes. So all power to you for doing that. That's amazing. I think you'll need a few weeks to listen to all those episodes. But hey, you know, there's a lot to be learnt from certainly this podcast when it comes to property investments. So let's dig into risk. You know, hiding under a rock is not going to help you later in life. That is for sure. And I think if we were to break down risk management, there's kind of two sectors, if you like. One is a lack of financial knowledge is really one of the reasons people have a poor relationship with the idea of investment. And two, really, the concept of fear of the unknown, fear of what next, fear of what's around the corner. And for a lot of Australians, let's face it, they are hiding under their doona, they're hiding under their blanket, they are living life very sheltered from the concept of investing. Most people today don't invest. Investment is something which, is getting, less and less and less focus as people sort of turn their nose at the concept of investing, which I think is going to be a bad decision later in life. Sometimes it's easier to sort of live life looking backwards because you learn a lot from how you've approached things. And certainly if you ask anyone who's a little bit older, they would answer that certainly in their younger years, they wish they had taken more risk. And if you are a young listener and you're in your 20s and in your 30s, then mate, do as much investment as you can because it will pay off certainly down the track. So let's discuss the fear of risk. In general, risk are things that we don't see, not things we can see. So when you hear about things in the news, inflation data, jobless rate data, economic happenings, wars, ultimately they are in the news. And because they're in the news, we can see them. And so the idea of understanding what is going on is a very big difference to that information flooding through from data sets actually being problematic. We can make absolutely sound investments decisions based on data coming through the system. And a big part of my day is really researching and understanding data and understanding how to play the data, how to invest into the data, how to lean into the uncertainty of the data. But really, risk is what we cannot see. And if we go back to, for example, COVID, really no one could see that. There's probably a handful of people on Earth that were, curious by when the next pandemic would unfold, but really no one could see it. And so it was a great example of what real risk actually is. If we go back to the global financial crisis, there was only one guy on Earth that shorted the global financial crisis. Only one person could see that unfold. And of course, they went on to make a movie. It's a great movie, The Big Short, I think it's called. Only one analyst could see that data. Everyone else couldn't see that risk. So living your life, hiding under the doona cover for the bogeyman is probably the worst thing you can actually go and do. And if we even go back to the GFC, there was some momentary issues with real estate dropping in value. But if you don't sell, you generally don't make a loss in real estate. And obviously, the idea of holding real estate over periods of risk is just part of the puzzle. Over the next 10, 15, 20 years, there will be something that jumps out and bites. I think the idea of risk is just creating a framework around it, understanding that that is likely to happen, that there is something no one can see, which will come out and bite us, is just part of the investment landscape. So you just need to consider it as an investor. You just need to play it. And really the best way to play unforeseen risk is just to see out the risk, because after contraction comes expansion. And of course, after expansion comes contraction. It's always been like that. There's always been something that will pop out. So rather than let that deter you and kill off your investment spirit, just factor it in that your investment may double in 13 years, not 10 years. Why? Because maybe there's going to be 2 or 3 years of something that no one can see come along and slow or pull the cycle in a different direction for a very, very few years. So in general, though, what's in the news, what's in the data, what's on CoreLogic's report, what's out there is available to observe and to play. It's a bit of a playbook. And so, I encourage people, get the financial review, read the information, subscribe to the right news, get the right data, because data is valuable and it can tell us where there are opportunities. It's not all grim and fire and brimstone. There is a lot to be learnt from what we can see. So quite often people will fear what we can see, which really is not at all the problem. Quite often the problem is what we cannot see. And again, when you set up the right structures, you have the right framework, you have the right buffers, really you shouldn't fear anything when it comes to real estate. It all comes back to framework. And of course, for a lot of people, when we talk about fear, for many people, it's the fear of losing money, the fear of losing money. And again, the beautiful thing about property, it is really illiquid. It's very hard to lose money in real estate if you do not sell. And for a lot of property investors, probably their greatest fear is never having a tenant. And ultimately, that does not happen that often in Australia, because Australia's business plan is more people. And so it's very uncommon to have a property sitting there unrented for a very long period of time. I would say probably most people's belief around the rental market is flawed. A lot of people I speak to have a fear which comes from somewhere. It's a belief which was created in someone's mind that renting properties is a problematic situation. And I can tell you it's not. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. There's some great professionals. There's a great legislation around renting. And it's pretty straightforward. And it's not uncommon to have people live in your properties for years at a time. So the risk of losing money, often people's brains have a negative bias. So negative thoughts creep into people's brain. And really, it's that, concept around fight or flight. And people really can have a disposition around a fear of loss. And they take it really more seriously than ultimately the idea of a gain. And so we're hardwired, if you like, to think about the negative side of investing rather than the positive side of investing. And knowing that is a great piece of information. Knowing human beings are really put risk over reward constantly, then we can self-analyze whether we're perhaps too risk-averse. And I think some of the time, too many people really cheat themselves out of great opportunities in investment because they have the disposition effect unfolding where they have too much negative bias towards things going wrong. And really, when you think about buy and hold investing, it's really a long-term concept. And really, we put way too much context into what the next year looks like rather than what the next 10 years looks like or the next 15 years looks like. And property investment needs a defined framework. And risk is really a big part of the definition of a defined framework. And of course, for people, when it comes to money, they will value money today more than the value of money tomorrow. People will quite happily save money in the bank, putting $200 a week away in the bank, because people can have a direct relationship with that tangible asset. They see money that is going into the bank, that $200 a week, as part of the here and now. But when you ask someone to invest $200 a week into a property that is going to grow at a certain rate and you won't get really the full rewards and maturity of that investment for 10, 12, 15, 18 years, that's a big, big shift for a lot of people. And really, most people don't become property investors because of the fear of money. Most people don't see propping up a property to create capital growth by spending $200 a week as a form of saving for their future self. And I've been open about it. I think really the idea of property investing should actually change. I think really property investment for most people is a savings investment asset class. Really is not a property investment asset class. Really, the nature or the dialogue of property investment sometimes creates a unrealistic language around what is actually unfolding. Property investment is doing developments. It's strata titling a block of flats and subdivisions and this concept of creating money out of really thin air. For most people to go and do that is not in their investment framework. They would be too sensitive to the loss. So really, property investment is a savings investment approach for most people. Buy a sound structure, get a sound tenant, and wake up in 5, 7, 10, 15 years with an investment which is worth more than what it is today. So people won't spend $200 a week to own an investment property or $100 a week to own an investment property because most people don't have a relationship with their future self. They see their future self as a different person. If you visualize your future self, for most people, there is no direct relationship. They are disconnected from their future. And even visualizing who you are as a much older person is very, very difficult for people. And even myself, when I visualize the future version of me, I don't actually connect to that person. I don't know who that person actually is. And so I know, though, that I have to look after that person. The investments I make today are really the investments for my 65-year-old self who does not have a job anymore and needs to fund my own retirement from my current self, my younger self. So we tend to see ourselves as a different person when it comes to the future version of us. And so it's very difficult for someone to go, well, the present me needs this, and I'm going to really take from present me to fund future me. And that is why most people will look at the maths on real estate in the next decade and not invest, because the next decade, it's going to cost $200 a week to own an investment property for the most part. A good one that's going to create growth, a good one in the right location, a good one which is going to transform, go through gentrification. You have to take from the present version of you and pay the future version of you. And of course, that risk for people to take from the present to pay for the future is really something whereby people's association with money is quite often negative. They see that as a loss rather than a gain. By spending $200 a week for their future self, they consider that as a negative loss rather than really thinking about it as a savings investment approach. Now, when it comes to duration of property investment, really the biggest problem for property investors is the problem of time. I'm always quoting that line because people do not have a definition around the maturity of real estate. In other words, to buy a property, see it mature in value, to buy a property and watch it go from negative $200 a week to own to positive $200 a week to own. What is that journey? What is that time frame? What is it? How do you take a piece of real estate today where your future self is paying, your present self is paying for your future self, and how do you transform it so that your future you is now paying for your present you? Wow, that's a tongue twister, isn't it? Well, you need what is known as a defined duration approach, a time alignment to risk. And again, like if you were to look at other asset classes, there is some time alignments for those assets. So if you were to take gold, for example, and you invested in gold, it's a 28-year journey. If you were to buy into real estate REITs, basically on the ASX 200, to watch them go and double in value and really create a return for you, it's an 18-year process. If you were to look at equities, it's a 17-year process. If you buy and sell equities in 6 months, you may make some short-term money, but ultimately, if you want to see a share and the index double, then you've got to go through a 17-year journey. If you look at commodities, they are 30 plus years in their life journey. If you look at government bonds, you can do anywhere from a fixed bond from 2 to 10 years, fixed cash, 1 to 3 years. You can see the bonds and cash are a shorter expectation, but there's obviously no leverage in those asset classes. So the returns don't get the benefit of certainly the property market, which is a leveraged asset class. In other words, you can put $100,000 into the market, borrow $1 million, and you know, you only need 10% return on that $1 million to create that $100,000 seed back into your portfolio. So the property cycle is an 18-year cycle. It really, the property cycle sometimes is not understood. Really, the idea of the property cycle is a business cycle. How does property travel through time? And really, how does it change? How does property evolve? And again, you need big structural shifts for property to change. You need the business cycle to change. You need the generation to change. You need really a transformation of money. You need people to see a new affordability in real estate. And we see this through time, 18 years. And of course, the Australian dwelling time to double on average is 16.2 years. So the last time Australia's real estate houses and apartments collectively doubled was a 16.2 year cycle. And if you look at the Australian average for property investors to hold real estate, it's reported as 8.8 years. You can see there's a disillusion effect between what it takes for real estate to double across all Australian residential real estate. And if you look at the investors across all Australian real estate, it's 8.8 years. Can areas go quicker? Can the doubling effect happen faster? Of course it can. You can speed this up if you've got the right framework. But ultimately, it is very, very important to have a defined duration approach to property investing. What is your defined process? I teach the Forex growth plan, and I say at a bare ass minimum, 15 years for properties to double in value. If you have a better budget, if you have the ability to buy the more scarce assets, that can increase. In fact, I did a recent report on the Forex growth plan, sampling some inexpensive properties, some more expensive properties, some mid-range properties, houses, apartments, townhouses. And what I found from that report was actually the Forex growth plan is helping real estate grow in 9.6 years, basically go from basically one price to its next price, traveling through time over that period of length. And of course, for a lot of people, 10 years is a long time. People say they will be a long-term investor, but ultimately end up being a short-term property investor. And really, where people go wrong when it comes to property investment, and I've certainly gone wrong when it comes to property investment, is when I do not know my framework. I will say I will invest for 10 years, but as soon as there's a speed bump, I bail out. That is not a good approach. Now, I looked at one property I was sampling through my report as to the performance of the assets that I've put together. I brokered the deal on the 22nd of December 2009. I brokered it in Sydney for $463,000. So I was looking at this property and I noticed that the investor I helped buy it sold the property on the 30th of June 2012. That they bought it for $463,000, they sold it for $523,000. So a very, very minimal amount of wealth created. Over that three-year period, they did not stick to the plan. The plan was ultimately a longer plan, a defined duration approach plan of the Forex growth plan, which is to beat the Australian dwelling average time. And of course, they bailed out. And I don't know why they bailed out. People create risk for themselves. And really, the message is we are the biggest risk. Humans are the biggest risk. I always say this, property is reliable. People are not reliable. People are not reliable to themselves. So when you look at the next data, the person who bought the property in 2012 ended up selling it 10 years later in 2022. And they bought it for $523 and sold it for $1,030,000. So effectively, they made double their money, $500,000, which on a low price asset is an incredible result. Today, the property is worth $1,070,000. So again, if the person that just had a simple buy and hold strategy held that real estate over the defined period, and I'm using this as an example because it's been 15 years, they would have actually seen their real estate go from $463,000 to $1,070,000. But also their rent today would have gone from $400 a week to what it is actually today, $800 a week. So you can see really what happened here was this person had a relationship with their current self, but not a relationship with their future self. They chose to make this business decision to look after their current self by selling. And ignored their future version of themselves. They were disconnected from their future. And today, if they had held that real estate and used some debt reduction strategies, they would well and truly, really probably be eliminating debt on that property. And now that property would be positive cash flow. Instead of costing $100 a week or whatever it was back then to own, or $200 a week, they would now be absolutely positive cash flow, creating income from the asset. Not only growth, but also income. Now, again, Westerners don't necessarily have problems. We create problems. And really, if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, really the need to breathe, the need for food, the need for water, the need for shelter. Most Australians don't have a problem. You can go and turn on the tap and get some water. You can get shelter for the most part, whether you rent or own. Australia's a pretty safe place. You know, the odd icy running around doing something a bit wild, but for the most part, we don't live in a war-torn country. We don't live in a war-torn country. We don't have security issues. We're not waking up going, shit, is... am I living in a time where I'm completely unsafe? And so really the only problems Australians have is a love and belonging problem. Effectively, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's not about safety and it's not about physiological needs here in Australia. We are blessed. Like, we are blessed. And sure, there's some people who... very, very small percentage of society who perhaps don't have the best healthcare, best food, water, and shelter. That is true. But 99.9% of Australians do not have a problem there. So our biggest problem typically is self-esteem and love and belonging. And it's a real epidemic with Westerners, because Westerners arguably don't have real problems with things like, people today in whatever, Ukraine, Palestine, all that kind of stuff. And so we tend to make up problems and we tend to create emotional problems. And for a lot of people, emotional problems come from not having a clear mission in life and not having their finances sorted out. And this then creates a erratic behavior effect for a lot of people around fear. They invest and then they pull out. They own an investment for a short period of time and then bail out of the asset class. They don't see the outcome of their investment mature because a lot of people, again, have a lot of time on their hands and end up really floating around this self-mastery problem Maslow talks about of, do you have self-esteem? Do you love yourself? And of course, people have this kind of reflection problem. And really, I think when it comes down to your money and your values. In the middle is what I would call your good life. So what you can create out of this world is your money. What you believe in is your values. And in the middle is this really important part of the puzzle called meaning, your good life. And what happens is when people struggle with meaning, they start to have perverted relationships with risk, which is really just another word for money. And so it's very important that when you invest, you also invest in yourself. You invest in self-improvement. I think the old wise fox says there's no such thing as a successful pessimist. There's only successful optimists, which is a great saying. Only successful optimists. And so you've got your money, which is risk. You've got to risk some money to get the reward. You've got your values, what you believe in. And in the middle is meaning. Meaning is just a word for your good life. And I think really when it comes to the components of meaning, the pursuit of a more meaningful life is really connected to money. And so people invest for more meaning today. And quite often when that doesn't come, because they've got this perverted relationship with investment, that it doesn't bring meaning to their life, they start to struggle with investing. And really, quite often, meaning needs to come from other things in life, not solely from money. And I'm a big believer you need three purposes to fulfill life. One can come from money, work, your investments. I think you need to tick that box. Two needs to come from a relationship, whether it's your wife, whether it's your girlfriend, your partner, your friends. You need to have a fulfilling relationship with people. And thirdly, purpose needs to come from hobbies, what you do outside of work, what you do outside of your relationships, what kind of hobby you have without your wife, what you do to bring you fulfillment. Purpose is a big, big part of being a property investor and having a positive relationship with risk. And again, the concept really needs to propel that you matter. And if you don't have meaning, you don't feel like you matter. So you struggle with esteem, you struggle with significance. And then you try and find a problem really that doesn't actually exist. Oh, the property hasn't gone up enough. Well, the problem doesn't exist. You've actually not given the asset more time to mature. You're just creating a problem which quite often is connected to you as a human. Remember, the greatest risk to property investment is us. If we don't know how to be a better version of ourselves, we struggle. And quite often, I think coherence is the challenge. And if we know what we are, where we want to go, and our framework, we know how to play the game of investments. But if your life doesn't make sense, being a property investor isn't going to fix that. And for a lot of people that I see struggle with investments, it's not around the investment. It's quite often around their association as to even why they exist. And they take that problem and bring it into the real estate economy. Remember, an easy way to just master the good life is you need to invest financially, whether it's stocks, shares, equity, bonds, property, whatever it is. You need to make money, whether it's getting more from your work, whether it's money plus values. In the middle is the good life, but the good life needs you to have three purposes. Fulfillment, not one purpose, But three, connected to work and investments, your relationships and your hobbies. And then you can start to make sense, because people manifest a lack of meaning in money troubles. That's what they do. And they will self-sabotage investing because of the idea of what is going on in their world. And really, for a lot of people, they believe that they're the only ones with money stress. And the reality is everyone has money stress. I have money stress. It's healthy to have stress around money. It's even if you become more financial, you still have different things to consider when it comes to how your relationship works with money. So it's a very, very important puzzle to crack. You're not alone. You're not the only one who is scared to invest. And you're not the only one with money problems. Everyone has money problems. But a key strategy here is everything is figure outable. One of the team from work mentioned that, one of the New Zealand team. I think it's a great piece of philosophy. Everything you can figure out. It's really investment is a game of leaning into uncertainty. Now, most people live and try to live in a certain state, but uncertainty is really, really when you think about it and break it down, it's danger, it's doubt, it's worry, it's anxiety. And learning to experience leaning into uncertainty is really the concept of investing, that you need to lean into looking after the future version of you, which is going to create a sense of danger. It's going to create a sense of doubt. It's going to create a sense of, can I actually do this? It's going to create anxiety 2 years after you've bought the investment and things are, you know, the tenant just moves out and you're like, well, weren't they supposed to stay for 3 years? It's going to create a sense of worry. But that's the game. You've got to go from certainty to uncertainty. You've got to go to uninvested to invested. You've got to go from literally taking a property from one price to another price. You've got to go through time. And all of that is really the transformation of energy from certainty to uncertainty. So don't have any limiting beliefs around risk. Risk, of course, is just a story that people have. The only thing that's keeping you from getting what you want is the story that you keep selling yourself. Hence why we say real estate investment is really 80% psychology and 20% really the investment. So stories are just really become strategies. I can't do something because I don't have enough time. That's the story that becomes your strategy. I can't afford to invest. That's the story that becomes the strategy. So you've got to live life on your terms, and that's the reality of risk. And of course, when it comes to risk management, lack of financial knowledge, get some coaching done. Surround yourself with knowledgeable people that understand really the investment world you want to invest through. Become part of property groups. Do what you need to do to financially invest in yourself. The investment in knowledge is a critical part of the puzzle. If you're not the smartest, well, if you are the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room, right? That's the old saying. And finally, the fear of risk is really comes from us. It comes from our associations. It comes from our beliefs. It comes from really the idea of not having the right alignment, the right framework, the right self-mastery. And of course, we carry that through into investment. So the long and the short of today's show is you've got to look after yourself as much as your investments and you'll get to the other side. All right, folks, that's it from me. Thanks for tuning in. I'll catch you on the next episode of The Urban Property Investor. Thanks for tuning in to The Urban Property Investor. To never miss an episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app or on YouTube. And I would love it if you could give the show a rating and share it with your friends and family. In between episodes, you can always keep in touch with me by connecting on social media over Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Until we meet again on the next episode of the Urban Property Investor, take care and bye for now.